Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on diabetes when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property, and that public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and these swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and request your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the Amish and diabetes, and we found that the Amish eat unclean meat. They eat a lot of fat. A lot of them are obese. And they have half the prevalence of diabetes that the general population has. Now, why is that? Well, there's three factors that come in here that we've discovered so far. And that is sugar, fat, and lazy. Sugar, fat, and lazy. Can you remember that? Sugar, fat, and lazy. That's what causes diabetes. That's what exacerbates the problem. So we took a look in the scripture and we found that God told us not to eat fat. Didn't say anything about sugar. We haven't got to sugar yet. But we discovered that the consumption of soda pop, at least here in America, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but I assume that's probably just about the same. But the consumption of soda pop here in the United States has doubled in the last 20 years. And the incidence of diabetes has doubled in the last 20 years. Now, I said the last time, you don't have to be a real rocket scientist to put, you know, a connecting link between those two items. We have an increasing population of young children now that are on Ritalin. And that's because sugar, that is refined sugar, that's the stuff that you get out of the bag, you know, marked CNH, the stuff that you get out of your soda pop, refined sugar. That stuff is a drug. It's awfully hard to kick sugar. You know, you kick alcohol, you kick tobacco. Now, try to kick sugar, and you're going to have a real challenge in front of you. Sugar is in just about everything that we eat. They dose it well with sugar, monosodium glutamate, and salt. It makes it taste real good. You become hooked on these kinds of foods, particularly fast foods. They make us fat. They make us couch potatoes. And then we develop diabetes. Now, diabetes, remember, is fatal, always. It's always fatal. It's just like AIDS, always fatal. No cure. We don't know what the cause is. But they keep hinting around the cause. They say, well, we find a higher incidence of diabetes in people that are obese, or we find a higher incidence in people with a high intake of sugar. We find a higher incidence in people with high intakes of fat. All right, well, let's put the three together. Let's put the fat and the sugar and the lazy together, and when we put the three together, we find we have an extremely high prevalence or incidence of this thing called diabetes. Now, diabetes is a cash cow. It's a medical problem rather than a legal problem. It's a cash cow for the American Medical Association because they make tons of money off of it. And one of the first things they do when they find out that you're diabetic or even pre-diabetic, they will put you on insulin. Now, the medical professionals know that if they can get you on insulin, they got you hooked for life. Hooked for life. If we can get you hooked on heroin, we got you hooked for life. I had a doctor tell me that one time. He said, heroin addicts come from the hospital. Heroin addicts come from the hospital. So you go to the hospital and you have an operation. They give you morphine. That's the proper name for heroin. On the street, we call it heroin. In the hospital, we call it morphine. You're going to like it. This Dr. Sansone, he said to me one time, so you're going to like this. You're going to like this. And then he warned me. He said, now, you know, when you're in pain, you need a little painkiller, and this is the best painkiller money can buy. And people, they take this morphine in the hospital, and it feels so good, they want more of it. So they keep telling the nurse that they're hurting real bad and that they need more of it, and so the nurse gives them more of it. And then when they leave the hospital, then they start looking for somebody that can supply it to them. They need a supplier now. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, insulin works very similar. It doesn't feel good like morphine or heroin. But it works about the same. See, once you get onto the insulin, you can't get off of it. Your pancreas is what's making the insulin. And when you take this insulin artificially, then the pancreas makes less and less of it until finally you become hooked on the insulin. So once you get on the insulin, it's not impossible to get off of it, but it's god-awful hard. And it isn't always that you have an insulin deficiency. You could have a CoQ10 deficiency. So let's talk about this thing called CoQ10. My boy discovered CoQ10. It's an enzyme. Your body makes it, but you can also buy it. And a lot of times your body doesn't make enough of the CoQ10. It isn't that you're short of the insulin. You're short of the CoQ10 and you develop symptoms of diabetes. And then the doctor says, oh, what your problem is that you've got diabetes, and so therefore we've got to put you on insulin. That'll get you hooked for life. If you're not a diabetic, it'll make you a diabetic. And after all, diabetes is that lack of insulin or the resistance that your body puts up to the insulin you produce. So let me flip over here to page 102, where we're talking about treatment strategies. Now, this is treatment strategies for diabetes. Although most of the focus has been placed on the qualitative genetic aspects of type 2 diabetes, the information presented shows that mitochondrial dysfunction leading to diabetes is somewhere along a continuum from increased oxidative stress to heterogeneous and homogeneous disease. Treatment strategies that focus on decreasing oxidative stress as well as increasing mitochondrial function might present important options. One treatment agent that might have clinical significance is coenzyme Q10, commonly called CoQ10. A controlled study of trans fatty acid-fed rabbits found administration of CoQ10 at the rate of 2 milligrams a day for 8 weeks produced a 15% reduction in fasting and 2-hour postprandial plasma insulin level of 44%. Triglycerides along with fasting and 2-hour postprandial glucose levels showed a significant decrease while HDL increased. The clinical benefit to patients with mitochondrial myopathies and other mitochondrial mutations employing CoQ10 has been evident in a number of therapeutic trials. Translated into English, it means CoQ10 is good for you, and It may be a CoQ10 enzyme deficiency rather than an insulin deficiency that's causing you your problem. So if you go to a doctor, you need to go to two or three. Don't be afraid to spend the extra money, because as you'll notice as we progress through the stack of paper, I've probably got 100 pages here, pulled it off the web, from vegans and vegetarians to religious people to doctors and scientists. I mean, there's all kinds of people out here that are selling diabetes. I say selling diabetes because everybody's got their take on it, and they've got their little thing they want to sell. Now, the vegetarians, they're selling vegetarianism. And the doctors over here are selling insulin. Pharmaceutical companies over here, they're selling insulin. So these various and sundry groups are selling you something. They want to make some money off of you one way or the other. Can't blame them for that. Or they want to convert you to their philosophical viewpoint. You know, if you're a Seventh-day Adventist, you want to get people off of their meat diet. Seventh-day Adventists are opposed to eating meat. Pointed that out to you last time, that vegetarian now is their vegetarianism. In the scriptures, called a doctrine of devils. God isn't opposed to eating meat. What God is opposed to is eating the wrong kinds of meat and eating fat. So those two statutes in here in the scripture, Leviticus 11 and Leviticus 3:17, says don't eat any fat and don't eat meat that doesn't have fins and scales, that doesn't have a divided hoof and chews its cud, or insects that are outside the group that have their legs up over their back, such as grasshoppers, locusts, and crickets. Not that most of you want to eat very many insects to start with, but, you know, here in America, we eat just about anything that we can poke in our faces. And especially down in the South, where they eat a lot of pork, they eat a lot of shellfish, they eat a lot of unclean fish. The Japanese have a habit of eating some unclean fish, but by and large, the Japanese aren't bothered by the same diabetes problem that we have here in the Western world. That's because they don't eat much red meat, only 5 pounds a year. So if they ate 5 pounds of fat a year, it probably wouldn't affect them. And various societies have less of this diabetes problem than other societies. So that's why I took a look at the Amish yesterday. I said, Jesus, the Amish over here, you know, they eat a lot of fat, they eat a lot of pork, don't have much diabetes. And we can figure that one out. They work hard. They sweat a lot. They sweat the toxins and poisons out of their skin. The rest of us don't. We're standing around the water cooler over here eating ham sandwiches and drinking Cokes and wondering why we get diabetes or why it's such a problem to us. Well, in this article here, what we're talking about here is, and you notice this by the big words that they're using over here, that they tested this CoQ10 scientifically in the laboratory with people, and they discovered that you take somebody that's got this pre-diabetes problem over here, and then you give him CoQ10 and it goes away. So then that tells us a little part of the story. There's insulin deficiency and there's CoQ10 deficiency. You may not have the insulin deficiency yet. It may be the CoQ10. So tuck that one away in your heart and make sure you get two or three opinions, because the doctor wants to sell you insulin. Once he gets you hooked, he's got you. CoQ10 doesn't get you hooked. Now they go on and they tell us a little more about dietary fats. Human consumption of dietary trans fatty acids, they're called TFAs, and that trans fatty acid now has been in the news recently, from partially hydrogenated vegetable oils has been estimated at 3% in the United States. So you're getting about 3% of your fat from these trans fatty acids from vegetable oils. Now, this hydrogenated vegetable oil over here is rancid oil, and then you'll hear a lot from health food people and vegetarians and so on about this thing of hydrogenated vegetable oil. Hydrogenated vegetable oil is a killer just like pig fat. And it's in just about everything. And it's in your Oreo cookies. Just take a look at the package and you'll see hydrogenated vegetable oil. And there's a ton of oils out there. So I came to a conclusion. I said, you know, God talks in the Bible a lot about olive oil. And olive oil is expensive. It's about, $20 a gallon, something like that. But olive oil and the people that live around the Mediterranean Sea that eat a lot of olive oil, drink a lot of wine, have a lot less health problems. And in the Bible, God mentioned to a fellow named Timothy, he said, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. And so that gives us a little bit of a clue concerning wine. Wine's good for your health. It's a natural product. It's food. And olive oil is good for your health. Mentioned in the Bible just like milk and honey. Good for your health. So around the Gordon household, we avoid just about all oils and fats, save four. Fish oil, and that's the omega-3. You get that naturally out of salmon and other fishes. And olive oil. We spend the little extra money that it costs to buy olive oil, and we avoid all of these trans fatty acids. It's worked out pretty well for us. And just picture this. If you're going to eat pig fat, unclean meats, sugar, trans fatty acids, McDonald's, you know, Coca-Cola, etc., you need health insurance. Let's just be real. You got to have health insurance if you're going to eat like that. Because you're going to get sick, and sickness is painful. Pain causes trips to the hospital. Hospitals are expensive, and you need health insurance. Now, health insurance costs right at $10,000 a year. Just rounded off, $10,000 a year is what you're going to be spending. Now, if you change your diet and you eat a scriptural diet, and, you know, just eat like God told you to eat, all of a sudden, you don't need health insurance. You're not going to get sick, so if you don't get sick, you don't need health insurance. Saves you $10,000 a year. You can buy a lot of olive oil for $10,000 a year. A lot of olive oil. You can buy a lot of wine. And remember, you want to eat in moderation. Moderation is one of the keys to success here. If you eat like a pig and you look like a pig and you've got the size of a pig over here, you probably are going to develop diabetes. And diabetes, remember now, is fatal. In 1921, back in 1921, when they discovered insulin, if you got diabetes, your average lifespan was 5 years from the onset of the diabetes and you were going to die. I mean, it was a fatal disease. That was the end of the argument. In 5 years, you're going to be dead. Today, with diabetes and insulin, you're not going to be dead in 5 years if you have diabetes. They'll put you on insulin. They'll keep you alive for 10 or 15. But I gave you the numbers last time on your average lifespan. If you develop diabetes now at an early age, you know, when you're childhood diabetes, you're going to take off about 25 years off your life. So if you're 15 years old and you develop diabetes, and you know, you can just about figure you're going to die somewhere right around age 49 or 50. And it could be even younger than that if you're overweight. So if you're obese and have diabetes at a young age, you can take off 25 years. If you're not fat, you can take off about 17 years. And the later in life that diabetes makes itself prevalent or present in your body, then the longer your lifespan's going to be. Which tells you that living a life without diabetes, keeping your pancreas in good condition, and developing and using your own insulin is the better way of life. That's the natural way. That's the God-ordained way. And remember, you're entitled to 70 years as a matter of law. 70 years of life. Did you know that? Let me show you that. God told you that He would give you 70 years. Now, if you take 70 and just multiply that times 365 days, you'll get 25,550 days. 25,550 days. That's 70 years, guaranteed. You're entitled to that as a matter of law. And if you die before you're 70 years old, then there's a breach of contract and you've got a wrongful death action against God, or you violated the terms of the contract and brought it on yourself. And in law, we call that the proximate cause of your own injury. So if you're out here eating fat and pig, etc., and you die at age 49, well, then you're the proximate cause of your own injury. If you're sucking Cokes and you're taking in these 9 teaspoons of sugar with every Coke, well, then you're the proximate cause of your own injury. But here in Psalm chapter 90, Psalm 90, verse 10, the days of our years are 70 years and 10, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. Now life is fairly short. It's likened to be a puff of smoke. I think that's the way Peter put it. It was like a puff of smoke. And you're here for 70 or 80 years, and then you die, and then comes the resurrection. It's like going to college. You know, you're going to spend a certain amount of time here in this physical life, and then you're going to have an opportunity in that 70 years, and let's see what you can produce, let's see what you can perform, let's see what you can do, and then in the resurrection, we'll figure out what we're going to do with you next. And that's the way that game is being played. Now, getting cut off 25 years ahead of your 80 or your 70 is a curse. It's not a blessing. It's a curse. If you live to be 80, 90, old Bob Hope, you know, lived to be 100. George Burns lived to be 100. And I'm sure that you'd like to live to be 100 years old. And I would. I want to die with my shoes off at age 110 of old age in my sleep. That's the way I want to check out. I want to live a long life. And our best chance of living a long life is to get the owner's manual, pay attention to the owner's manual, because the designer of the human body is probably in a better position than the average vegetarian or the average medical doctor or the average religious guy to tell you how to take care of that body, in the same way that the Ford Motor Company is probably in a better position, having engineered, having designed, having built the automobile, to tell you how to service it and how to keep it up. I think that just makes good common sense. And we Americans take far better care of our automobiles than we do of our bodies. And you need your body to carry your brain around. And that's the only purpose for your body, to carry your brain around, because that's where you're at, up in your brain. And when you become a paraplegic or a quadriplegic like Superman and you can't move, you know, and your body, your automobile, doesn't move, that's not a very pleasant place to be. So you're entitled to 70 years. Now, he goes a step further in Exodus 23. And he says, I will fulfill all of your days. I had a friend of mine the other day. He just died. He's 69 years old. And I was sad that my friend died at age 69, because he was 6 months short, of his 70 years. Now you might say, well, you know, that's pretty close, you know. Well, close counts in horseshoes. It doesn't count in Bible prophecy. It doesn't count in biblical law. And here in Exodus 23, let's see if I can find the scripture here. I think it's verse 26. Am I right? 23. Let's flip over here to about verse 26 and see what I got here. It is. There shall nothing cast their young nor be barren in your land, and the number of your days I will fulfill. So God said, I will fulfill the number of days. It says all of your days, not all of your years, all of your days. Now just try it out. You have 365 times 70, 25,550 days. And my friend was about 180 days short. And that's a signal. You know, it's a signal. There was some reason why he didn't make it to 70. Now, David made it to 70. Well, King David, you know, but he didn't make it to 80. He made it to 70, and he died. He didn't get his extra 10 years, or 15, or 20. He got just exactly what he was entitled to, just exactly what the contract called for. And then he died. I'd like to get a little more than the contract calls for, if it's at all possible. And I'm sure that you would too. I haven't run across very many people yet that say, well, I've lived my life and I'm just tired and I'm ready to die and I'm 46 years old. I haven't run across anybody like that yet. So tuck it away in your heart. You're entitled to 25,550 days, 70 years, under the terms of the contract. And when you lose 25 years of it, then you're under a curse. You didn't collect all of your benefits. That's one of your bennies. So getting back to dietary fats over here, TFAs, that is these trans fatty acids over here, which has a detrimental effect on the function of various membranes, associated enzymes, and receptors. There is evidence that these TFAs have a lower rate of oxidation by mitochondria. I'm not quite sure what mitochondria is. They use a lot of big words in here so that we can't understand what the hell they're telling us. This decrease in oxidation may be due to a direct effect on the functioning of complex V or other complexes of the electron transport chain. Dietary fats have been associated with both insulin resistance and insulin sensitivity. Saturated fatty acids are associated with insulin resistance, while medium and long chain fatty acids, especially omega-3, are associated with increased insulin sensitivity. So the omega-3 fatty acids come from fish. So if you eat a little salmon once in a while, we try to eat fish here about once a week. We're not Catholic, but we eat fish about once a week. I try to avoid eating it on Friday, though. And then we get a little of that omega-3 fatty acid, and we avoid eating fat. So when I kill a steer or kill a bull or something here, I'm careful to cut off all the fat and throw it out to the dogs. And then when I make ground hamburger, which I make a little, it's called ground round, what you do is you just take the lean of the meat and you grind it up. You can have ground beef. The reason they like to put a lot of fat in is because it binds it all together. If you're cooking hamburger, you're cooking ground beef, and you don't have fat in it, it kind of gets crumbly and it falls apart. It tastes good, but it kind of falls apart. And the meat packing industry, they're the guys that went to the legislature to get fat included in the hamburger. You see, we got off onto fat cattle. I'll tell you this little story over here. I don't have fat cattle. I produce lean beef. That's why I have Jersey cattle. They have about 6% body fat. But other breeds of cattle, such as Charolais and Brangus and Santa Gertrudis and White Facey, those are called fat cattle, and they put on weight faster than muscle. Muscle is the meat. Fat, you know what fat is, it's that white gooey stuff. Well, you put these cattle into a feedlot, and they will put on weight at the rate of about 2 to 2.7 pounds a day in a feedlot. So they feed them this special mixture in a feedlot to get them to gain weight. So they buy them as wiener calves at 500 pounds, 350 to 500, put them on the feedlot, and they start feeding them this special feed. And they gain weight very rapidly. Whereas if you leave them out on grass, you know, like John Wayne, you know, trailing these cattle, you know, from Texas up to Chicago, he's only putting on a pound a day. Now, would you want to put on 1 pound a day of meat and muscle, or 2.7 pounds a day in the feedlot? Well, you know, the ranchers and farmers and cattlemen are businessmen. And they take a look at that and they say, if I've got this Charolais cow, or I've got this Charolais steer, and he puts on 2.7 pounds a day, and this guy Gordon over here, he's got this crummy Jersey steer, he puts on a pound a day, which would I rather have? And he says, well, I'm selling this beef. I'm not eating it. I'm selling this beef. Now, when you sell this beef, and the people find out that it's tender. The more fat that you have in it, the more tender this meat is. People like tender beef. They don't want tough meat. And then it puts on at the rate of 2.7 pounds a day as opposed to 1 pound a day. It's more tender. And so they say to themselves, well, then it's more profitable. After all, that's the name of the game, profit. Now, take a guy like George Gordon. I want to follow scriptural law, and I want to live to be 110. I don't want to eat any fat, so I don't want Charolais cattle. I'm not interested in that 2.7 pounds a day. I'm interested in that 1 pound a day from my Jersey cow that puts on meat instead of fat. And so that's the difference. That's the difference. And so you go to Kroger's or Safeway and you buy your cut of meat, and it's got this marbled meat. And of course, we've been taught that this marbled meat is good. And I don't deny it. It's just delicious. You know, you go down to Steak and Ale and you get a piece of I like prime rib. And then I got to sit there and cut all the fat out of it. See? And then it's kind of laborious, and people don't want to spend the time doing that. So they just eat the fat right along with the meat. Well, the meatpacking industry, they took a look at all this fat that they had, which people typically don't want, on the outside of the meat and all this fat. And so they said, well, what are we going to do with all this fat? It has about 25% body fat on these fat cattle and about 6% on these lean cattle. And so we got to do something with this fat. So they went to the legislature and they got legislation enacted in all 50 states, just like the honey producers did. They can call honey pure if it's got 51% honey. So they can put up to 49% corn syrup into the honey and still call it pure Sioux Bee honey. It isn't. It's an adulterated industrial product is what it is. And people eat that, and then they wonder why they get sick. Well, same thing happens with meat. So in case you were wondering why it is that you're eating so much fat, it's designed that way. It's put right into the system. You got to work. If you're going to stay away from fat, you got to work on it. And so here they give you a story, and they come out here with some scientific information. You know, the scientists got to work on it, and they said, hey, We take a look at this fat. We've got omega fats. We've got fatty acids. We've got this trans fatty acid, TFAs. And we see that when you've got this trans fatty acid, that it is associated with an increased rate of diabetes. And that's exactly why God told you in Leviticus 3:17 and Leviticus 7:22, don't eat animal fat. Don't eat animal fat. And on the other hand, you know, the big meat packing companies and the feedlot operators are sitting there saying, you want to eat more and more fat because it tastes real good. So they give you this taste sensation, and then you go into McDonald's and you say, wow, this is really good. This thing really tastes good. And they put a little MSG in it to make it taste even better. Just like in the hospital, you know, they make that morphine, you know, feel real good. Feels real good. As old Dr. Sansoni said to me, he says, you're going to like this real well. Hang on a minute. I've got to give you a reminder here. And that reminder is that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and the Law School, please go to our website. Now, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, please call the law school at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that these authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Well, those are the two things that I wanted to tell you about these. Alternative Medicine Review, Volume 7, Number 2, published in 2002, that dealt with CoQ10 and trans fatty acids. That's all I want to cover out of that particular part of the story, but there's a big, thick atlas here. Let me give you the website on this, in case you'd like to know, well, where does all this information come from? Where does this lunatic get his information? It comes from the International Diabetes Federation. International Diabetes Federation. And they have an electronic version of Diabetes Atlas at www.idf.org/e/atlas. So what we do here at the law school, I told Dirk the other day, I said, now listen, I need some information on diabetes. So he goes in there and he gets on a search engine, you know, and he plugs in diabetes, and it tells you all these various sources. I must have 25 or 30 sources of information. We won't cover all of them here on the air, but there's that many or more. And one of them, a great big thick report called the Diabetes Atlas Executive Summary, Second Edition. Let's see how many pages this is. Oh, shucks. More than 50 pages if you want to print it out. And they've got an index in here, and they say, well, you know, we're going to talk about, and we're going to take you around the world, and we'll show you where diabetes is, like the global burden of diabetes and diabetes in the young, a global perspective, cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and the effectiveness of self-management education, educational practices, and then meeting the challenges in Africa, the Mediterranean, the Middle East, Europe, North America, South and Central America. They take you all around the world, and they tell you what the incidence is and what they're doing about it. And these people are, you know, in the meanwhile, they're trying to sell you an idea, product, a concept over here, trying to save you from diabetes, which is like, you know, trying to save a dog from stink on a fish that he wants to roll in. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody's interested in it. Well, nobody's interested in diabetes until they get it. Then they go to the medical doctor, and the medical doctor, he's got a good bedside manner, and he says, well, we'll put you on insulin over. It's no big deal. Now, by the time you get on insulin and by the time you've developed diabetes, you know it's pretty much too late. I mean, if you've got diabetes and you're listening to this program right now, for practical purposes, it's probably too late for you. Because at this stage of the game, you're going to have to make such radical changes that psychologically you can't handle that. I remember I had a guy here one time, he had cancer, and he was an electrician, strong, healthy young man, he's probably in his 40s. And I had an old naturopathic doctor, an old Indian doctor down in Houston, Texas. He told me one time, he said, if you come to me with cancer, if your body energy is still at 15%, I can save your life. I can keep you from dying. I can turn the cancer on. I can cure the cancer at 15%. He said, but once the body energy gets below 15%, he said, there's nothing I can do for you. And the same thing is true with this chemotherapy. See, the chemotherapy works like a shot, kids. Chemotherapy. My God, it works like a shot. It kills tumors. But only 37% of patients survive it. And here's what happens. It kills the tumor, and then your body has to dispose of the waste material. And it disposes of the waste material through your lymph system, kidneys, and liver. And these dead cancer cells plug up your lymph system, your kidneys, and your liver. And you die from the toxemia. It isn't that the medical profession cannot kill cancer. By God, they can kill it. There's nine ways to cure cancer. Nine. And three of them the medical practitioners have. Cut, burn, and poison. Works. Don't kid yourself. Works. It's just that you can't dispose of. It kills the cancer so fast, you can't dispose of the toxins. And so 37% of the time your body can dispose of the toxins. So that's why the naturopaths suggest that you get on a more natural methodology. Now, if you've got a tumor and you operate on it and you cut it out, yeah, that solves that problem. If you burn it out and you kill it, well, that solves that problem. The cancer is dead. When cancer goes through your body and you've got it everywhere, you can cure it. But it's got to be your immune system. And the minute that you start taking this chemotherapy or the radiation, it destroys your immune system. And when your immune system is gone, you're gone. Because now your immune system, which is the only thing that can cure or heal a disease, is gone. You've lost it. And that's what happens here with this insulin. You get insulin dependent, your pancreas shuts down, and then you're on your own. You know, now you're hooked. I got you. Now, there are some cases. I've read some stories here by Richard Schultz and others. You know, they've taken people that are on insulin, diabetics, been that way for years and years, and rebuilt their body, rebuilt their immune systems, got their livers flushed and functioning again, got their bodies cleaned out, and got their pancreas to working, and got them back to normal. But as I mentioned, the changes that you have to make in your diet are so great, and that's what happened to this young man. You know, when it came down to you've got to quit eating meat, and that's because it takes 75% of your body energy to digest it, and you've got to get on a vegetarian diet over here, that this guy just freaked out, and he couldn't do that, and so he kept eating meat and kept on his regular diet. And he kept going to the medical doctors, and the medical doctors, there's one old lady around the corner here, said to me, they just doctored him to death. And that's what happens. They just keep selling you drugs, and they keep sticking the stuff in you. And one day, your body can't take it anymore, so it dies. So you can tuck that away in your heart. Now, if you've got what it takes, you can probably do that. Now, my wife did. She was diagnosed with cancer 29 years ago, 78. And they said, well, you got about 3 to 6 months to live. For $100,000, we can treat you. You probably live about 18 months, maybe 2 years. And she got to mulling that over, says, geez, for $100,000, you know, I can live for 18 months. My family could probably use the money just as well as the doctor making his boat payments. And so she decided to pass on the chemotherapy, the cut, burn, and poison routine. She came home, she picked up a book by some health food book over here and found out about wheatgrass and Wigmore's program. She got onto diet and rebuilt her immune system. Took her 2 years and 8 months. She ate no meat for 2 years and 8 months. You know, you can say what you want about vegetarians, but, you know, they've got some good points. I'm not opposed to vegetarianism. I'm not opposed to vegetarians. I eat a lot of vegetarian meals. Vegetarianism has a role in good diet, no doubt in my mind. The thing I object to is the vegetarians coming along and they preach, you know, like a country preacher over here that booze, brother, is bad for you. Don't drink booze. That's what the Baptist preachers tell you. Well, that's fine, but they didn't get that out of the Bible. And I'm not opposed to people that are teetotalers or don't want to drink. You know, if you don't want to drink, that's fine. But don't come to me and tell me, well, you got that out of the Bible. That's poppycock. Don't come to me with Genesis 1:28-29. Tell me you got vegetarianism out of the Bible. That's poppycock. If you want to be a vegetarian, then be a vegetarian. But don't blame it on God. He told you plainly it's a doctrine of devils. Now, the key here then is in a biblical diet, and I don't count calories. Ladies and gentlemen, when I sit down at the table, I eat. And I'm not balancing my B vitamins and B6 and all these. I don't have enough time in life for that. You know, I'm an old man already. I haven't got time to sit here and count calories and vitamins and minerals and all that kind of thing. It's been designed very well into your food. Your master engineer over here said, I'm going to give you a land of milk and honey. The milk wasn't pasteurized, neither was the honey. And eating meat's great, but you can't eat fat. Eating meat's great, but you got to eat the right kinds of meat. Well, my wife got off of meat altogether for 2 years and 8 months. Now, for most of you meat eaters out there, that is such a traumatic change, you can't handle it. Can't handle it. So that being the case, and I hear whiners all the time telling me, I can't do that, you know, for 15 reasons. I said, okay, no problem. Then you have to die from your diabetes. That's all. So just make up your mind. Put your head between your knees and kiss your you-know-what goodbye, because that's the final solution to people that are whiners and I can'ts. Now, once in a while, you'll find some guy that says, well, I can and I want to live and I want to do something about this, and let me see if I can solve this problem. Let me tell you ahead of time, children. Let me tell you ahead of time. It's a hell of a lot easier to avoid diabetes than it is to cure it. It's a hell of a lot easier to avoid cancer than it is to cure it. It's not impossible, but most people can't handle it. And especially here in the United States. Americans have become so weak as a society. I mean, the whole population is so weak, so sick today. They can't handle that. So the only solution is just fold her up and die. But I wanted to tell you about this diabetes atlas over here, 50 pages. That's going to go a long ways to telling you what it is that science has discovered about diabetes. And I'm not opposed to science, you know. It's just that science doesn't have all the answers. Never have. They don't now. Never will. The guy that's got all the answers is your creator. He's the guy that designed the body, designed the food that goes in, the fuel, and said, here's the way this thing works. Here's the way to get 70 years out of it. You know, you buy a new car, and the guy says, you want to get 100,000 miles out of this car? Here's the way to do it. Let me tell you how to service this car. Let me tell you how to take care of it, and it'll give you 100,000 miles of trouble-free mileage, and you'll save money in the process. People don't have any problem paying $10,000 a year for health insurance. I do. You know, in 10 years of 10,000 a year health insurance premiums, that's $100,000. I don't want to spend $100,000 on health insurance. And if all I have to do is give up fat, sugar, and blood in the process, well, that doesn't sound like a bad deal to me. Now, I haven't been buying any health insurance. I'm an old man already. I'm in pretty good health. We don't have health insurance here. I've been here for 20 years, and we haven't spent one dime on health insurance premium in 20 years. Never had any sickness or disease here. I got a girl 18 years old, got all of her teeth. Doesn't have any fillings. Of course, we don't feed her fat and blood and bad food either. All right, now let me circle off this CoQ10. I told you that story over there. And once on insulin, always on insulin. And I got one more article on this CoQ10. I'll read that to you a little later. I gave you these two over here. And told you what the death rates were now on this diabetes. If you're 25 to 44... 25 years old to 44, and you develop diabetes, you're going to die on average at age 57. If you're age 55 to 74, then on average you're going to die at age 61. And if you're 45 to 54, you're going to die on average at age 59 if you develop diabetes at that age level. The longer you can put off diabetes, the longer you're going to live. Now, if you could put off diabetes for a lifetime, wouldn't that be kind of neat? All right. So diabetes shortens your lifespan, and it's known that persons with diabetes die earlier than persons without diabetes, and there has been only limited data regarding the influence of diabetes on the death rate in a representative sample of adult Americans, and therefore differences in death rates were studied in a national sample here of 14,374 people ages 25 to 74 in the 1971 to 1975 NHANES-1 survey. And the persons who were surveyed in this study were contacted four times through the next 20 years. Whether they were alive or not was determined for 13,830 persons. 710 were diabetics. 13,120 were non-diabetics. At the end of this study, 4,578 people had died. And the following table compares the death rates based on the age of death and whether or not the person had diabetes when they passed away. Oh, gosh. This website here is called PHARMINFO, Pharminfo. PHARM info, farm info, dot 8media.org. Can you remember that? Farminfo.8media.org /diet disease/diabetes. And it'll give you the death rates over here. So if you're wondering, where did I get the numbers and how did I put that together? I use that source right there, and they don't actually tell you the answer. You've got to put the numbers together, crunch them in your Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instruments calculator, and then it'll tell you the answer to that riddle, and that is what your chances of dying going to be. I'm not quite sure why they don't just come right out, do the math, and tell you like I did, that if you're fat, have diabetes, and you're under 45 or under 55, that your lifespan is going to be shortened by 25 years and you're going to die at age 49. And you lose an extra 8 years, boys and girls, if you're fat. And by the way, most of the people who have diabetes are overweight. They're overweight. And if you're eating in the fast food restaurant over here, which most of us are, 47% of the money that we're spending in the United States of America is going to the restaurant industry now. And I don't know what percentage, but a large percentage of that's going to Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's my favorite. I eat at Kentucky Fried KFC. I'm not plugging KFC. I eat there about once a month, 12 times a year. I think that if you eat in a fast food restaurant about one time a month, I might not even eat there one time a month because I don't go to town necessarily one time a month. But, you know, when I go to town, not every time I go to town, but once in a while I like to eat at KFC. And when you eat a KFC, peel the skin off that chicken. The toxins in a chicken are in the skin. Yeah, just take the skin off that chicken and eat the meat and avoid the skin. And that'll help you a little bit there, too. And it keeps the fat away from you. All right, now we talked a little about obesity over here. Obesity cuts the diabetic's lifespan. Obesity can reduce life expectancy by 8 years in people with type 2 diabetes, research suggests. All right. So remember I said now it's going to cut your lifespan by 8 years? Let's see if we can steer you onto this one here. It's called newsvote.bbc.co.uk. So this comes out of the BBC in the United Kingdom. So you go to http://newsvote, N-E-W-S-V-O-T-E dot BBC dot CO dot UK. And you'll get this article here on obesity cuts diabetics' lifespan. A study by the University of Surrey and the Royal Free and University College Medical School looked at over 44,000 patients with adult onset diabetes. Bennett Middleton, chief executive of the charity Diabetes UK, said the findings were worrying as 80% of people with type 2 diabetes are overweight. Okay, so their study of 44,000 people showed 80% of them overweight. All of these people had diabetes. Only 20% were not fat. Well, that tells you a little piece of the story. You're overweight. You got to knock off the weight. And if you're going to whine and say, well, I can't lose weight, I've just tried and tried and tried. Well, okay, then you have to die from diabetes. See how simple that is? Knock off the weight or you have to die. Now, of course, this kind of death comes slowly over a long period of time. And so it's easier to die this way than it is to die suddenly. And if I put a gun to your head and I said, hand over your wallet or I'm going to shoot you. See, you could act very rapidly. You can divest yourself of your wallet in short order. You can do it immediately, right now, because your life is on the line, right now. But when we talk about disease, see, it occurs over years and years of time. And then because it's such a long period of time, you know, we can't see the urgency. Type 2 diabetes is the most common form of diabetes, accounting for 80% of all diabetics in the UK, about 1.2 million people. It develops when the body becomes resistant to the effect of insulin and is most common in people over 40. Well, by the time you've been eating fat for 40 years, the cells in your body become resistant to insulin because they're full of fat. So that's why God told you not to eat fat. Can you get that? All right. Now, if you want to continue eating fat, well, that's your choice in life. Life is filled with choices. But when you come down with diabetes and they're saying, well, we got to take off your leg below the knee. I remember one old guy, they'd take off his toes, and then pretty soon they'd take off his butt, and then pretty soon they'd take off his leg below the knee, and then pretty soon they'd take off his leg up around his hip, and, you know, it just kept on and on until finally they doctored him to death. But every time they go into surgery that way, they make a little extra money. And so if you've got insurance, you know, you can have a lot of operations. Research professor Ross Lawrenson from the University of Surrey said the life expectancy in this group was higher than we would normally expect because we used an older cohort of people with an average age around 63, and many were already in their late 70s. So they took a group of people with type 2 diabetes whose average age was around 63, and they ran them through this process over here, and then they watched them, you know, for 20 years. And when they got all through, they found out that this group of people, their lifespan was cut by 8 years on average from a control group, which didn't have diabetes. All right, so now there's your story, who weren't fat. Let me back up there. They took two groups of people, the fat people, and they took the skinny people, who all had diabetes, 44,000. And then their control group was the skinny people, and they found out that the fat people over here lived 8 years less than the skinny people. So now, if you're skinny and have diabetes, you're gonna live 8 years longer than if you're fat and have diabetes. 8 years longer. So now, if you want to add 8 years to your life, then you need to knock off some pounds. And if you need help knocking off pounds, well, then go to a dietitian, go to a doctor, and say, "Listen, I need some help. I can't handle this by myself," and I'm like that with credit cards. I can't handle credit by myself. I got to have help, so I get rid of them. And if you're like I am, kind of weak and spineless, and you know you can't do certain things, well, then go to your wife and say, "Hey, listen, I got to have a little help here. Need to lose a little weight. Need to solve this problem over here," and get with the program, and then you'll be a listener to the Law Hour a lot longer. So there's the story on obesity cuts diabetics' lifespan. I'll put that over here on this pile. We're just about out of time. I'll tell you a little bit more next time when we come back, talking about this thing of diabetes and the care of diabetes. So this obesity over here, I'm going to circle that one off. That causes an 8-year average lifespan loss. Remember, God gives you 70 years by contract. You saw that in Psalm 90, verse 10. He said, "I'll fulfill all of your days," in Exodus 23, verse 26. So if you want to collect your whole 70 years, 25,550 days, give up the fat. And then there's projections going into the future. And what are the projections, you know, going forward into the future? And what about women versus men and ethnic groups, you know, like blacks versus Hispanics? We'll tell you more about that as we progress along. But let me give you a reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, I got to leave it right there. Time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.